On September 8th, 2002, a local fisherman found a body floating in Turnbull Creek in Dickinson County, Tennessee. Next to the body was a partially submerged, bright red Jeep Cherokee. It looked as if the person had been in a tragic motor vehicle accident. But upon further investigation, it would lead to something far more sinister. I am your host, Kayleanne, and this is the ASMR Witch Podcast. And we will be discussing a murder that is a family affair. It was a warm and sunny day when investigators pulled up to Turnbull Creek in Dickinson County, Tennessee. On September 8th, 2002, they removed the body from the creek. They discovered it belonged to a woman, possibly in her 30s. Her clothes were tattered and torn, and she had injuries that indicated blunt force trauma. It became incredibly clear that this was no car accident. The county was shocked and devastated when news surfaced of the tragic death and murder of 34-year-old Lee Ann Mangrum. Investigators were now faced with a daunting task: informing Leanne Mangrum's family of what had happened to her. They stopped at her mother's home first. Her mom, Betty, greeted them graciously, and they entered into a living room where Leanne's photos were draped everywhere. They knew this conversation was going to be one this woman would never forget. Betty broke down upon the news of hearing what happened to her daughter. She then lifted her head, wiped the tears from her eyes, and expressed a grave concern. In the wee hours of the morning of September 8th, Betty received an incredibly strange and frightening call from Leanne. Leanne whispered into the phone, "Mom, I'm scared. Help me." Leanne Mangrum was born on November 19th, 1967. She was a devoted mother, a loving daughter, and a wonderful friend. Betty had heard from Leanne the prior evening on September 7th. Leanne was enjoying a drink at a sports bar with a friend, and she had borrowed their phone to contact her mother. She told her mother not to worry, and she would meet her in the morning for church. Like every good Southern girl, Betty told investigators that she had the key to Leanne's home. As Betty handed over the key to Leanne Mangrum's home, she scrolled through her caller ID and provided investigators with the phone number of the friend's phone who Leanne had borrowed to contact her the night before. Investigators immediately went to Leanne's home. And when they opened the door, they knew something had gone very, very wrong. When investigators opened the door, it was painfully clear. Something evil and sinister had taken place. Windows were smashed, lamps were broken, and it was evident that a struggle had ensued. However, a plethora of evidence was found. Investigators were able to recover a cigarette on the lawn, a perfect palm print on a shard of glass, and blood evidence found on the door. Investigators now needed to inform the rest of the Mangrum family. Terry Sr. Mangrum and his new wife, Kimberly Mangrum, had primary custody of Leanne and Terry's children. Terry Jr., who was in high school, and Alicia, in elementary. The family was shocked and devastated, just like Leanne's mother. The family gave investigators a very interesting statement about their last interactions with Leanne. That prior evening, on September 7th, Leanne arrived to the Mangrum home in her red Cherokee, and according to Kimberly Mangrum, she was asking for medication for her anxiety. Suddenly, a man in a 1996 black Mustang pulls up and exits the vehicle. He saunters, mad and nervous, waiting for Leanne. Kimberly told investigators that he looked like the devil, and Terry Jr. recalled his salt and pepper hair, his muscular build, and that he went by the name Bob. It was clear to investigators this man made everyone uncomfortable. They turned back to the phone number that Betty had given them of the person that Leanne was at the sports bar with. His name was Robert Smith. Investigators arrived at the home of Robert Smith, remembering what Kimberly Mangrum had told them. This suspicious Bob and his 1996 black Mustang. However, when investigators saw him, he did not match the description given by the Mangrum family. In fact, he broke down at the news of his dear friend passing away. He told investigators that he had last seen her outside the sports bar as they said their goodbyes and pulled away. He also did not own a black Mustang, and he was cleared of any involvement. It was now time to turn to the autopsy results. Leanne Mangrum was beaten with a large object, deduced to be a baseball bat. She had water in her lungs, and her cause of death was drowning. The town was stunned and scared that a murderer was living among them. One of Leanne's family members confided to investigators that Leanne was concerned about a man named Elvis. This man had been a friend of Leanne's, but had been bothering her and smothering her for quite some time. He became infatuated with her and told everybody in town that Leanne was his girlfriend. But they never dated. Investigators now turn to Elvis and pull him in for questioning. Surprisingly, Elvis was completely forthright and honest about his infatuation with Leanne. He admitted that he drove past her home on the evening of September 7th. He admitted that she did not have feelings for him, and he admitted he was madly in love with her. But he would have never harmed her. Investigators thanked him for his honesty, but informed him that jealousy is a strong evil. And they asked Elvis if he would agree to a polygraph. And he did. And he passed. Detectives then attended the funeral of Leanne Mangrum. They watched family grieving and mourning, sharing stories amongst each other. They wanted to observe who was there, who wasn't, and if anything out of the ordinary happened. Right away, investigators were immediately puzzled when four very important people were not in attendance. These four people, Terry Sr., Kimberly Mangrum, Terry Jr., and Alicia. At the funeral, investigators received a bag of court documents. These documents told a tale about Leanne and Terry Sr.'s messy divorce. Leanne decided, when the divorce was finalized, to move away with her two children. She wanted a fresh start, but her children were too unhappy. Leanne agreed that her children could move back in with their father, and she would continue to pursue security and a better life for them, and would join them back in Tennessee. When Leanne returned to regain custody of her children, Terry Sr. and his new wife absolutely refused. They informed Leanne they wanted sole custody. Things got ugly. Kimberly was making it impossible for Leanne to see her children. She went to great lengths as to calling CPS on Leanne while she was away on vacation, claiming that Leanne had no food in her home for her children. When CPS arrived, they found an empty fridge and bare cabinets, and they accused Leanne of child neglect. Among the myriad of documents carving out a bloody battle of custody and divorce, investigators found that around the time of her murder, Leanne, Perry Sr., and Kimberly Mangrum were all set to appear before a judge about the finalized custody of their two children. Investigators now turned to the community. They spoke with neighbors, friends, co-workers of Kimberly and Terry Sr. Neighbors provided startling insight. They felt that Kimberly was a controlling and manipulative mother. She was constantly seen yelling at the children, and the children seemed to cower at her presence. A neighbor also informed of a very peculiar incident one morning. He looked outside to see Kimberly, Terry Jr., and Alicia vigorously cleaning her car from the inside out for several hours. It was so odd to him that he grabbed a pair of binoculars to get a closer look. Kimberly was thorough and frantic about the car being completely spotless. When investigators asked whose vehicle the Mangrum family were washing and cleaning so vigorously, the neighbor responded, "Kimberly's 1996 black Mustang." Now investigators were faced with the very possible and plausible idea that there was no Bob. There was no mad, nervous man waiting in the wings for Leanne. And possibly that Kimberly had bought herself an alibi if her car had ever been spotted on the night of Leanne's death. But they could not prove this. In fact, they couldn't prove anything, and they did not understand why everything kept coming back to the Lee Ann Mangrum family. On October 29th, 2003, they received the break they were looking for, and what they find makes their blood run cold and their skin crawl. Early on in the investigation, they had collected DNA from members of the Mangrum family. When the evidence at the crime scene was compared to this, the results were astounding. The DNA evidence on Leanne's door had matched a male relative. The palm print also matched a print on file. And the DNA on the cigarette was also a match. The blood belonged to 15-year-old Terry Jr. The palm print to young little Alicia. And the cigarette butt to Kimberly Mangrum. This crime was a family affair. Investigators now had to move quickly. They interviewed Terry Jr. at school, and he immediately gave an admission and a very bizarre story of events that took place on September 7th, 2002. He informed investigators that he and his mother agreed to meet at Turnbull Creek when she fell and hit her head. He panicked as his mother's body floated away into the creek. He pushed her red Jeep Cherokee into the water and fled. Investigators did not buy it, and he was taken into custody. Next, investigators confronted Kimberly about the cigarette that they found at Leanne's home. She claimed that her and Leanne were trying to make amends, and they would often have conversations over cigarettes together. They then tell her about Terry Jr.'s startling confession. She breaks down and begins to cry and says, "Oh my God, what if that were me? Why would he do that to his mama?" Again, investigators were not buying what the Mangrum family was selling, and they placed her into custody as well. Terry Sr. was adamant that he had no involvement with anything that may have happened on the night of September 7th, 2002. However, he does inform investigators that Kimberly and the kids went out for several hours that night. And upon their return, Kimberly said with a smile, "Terry, we don't have to worry about Leanne anymore." Terry Sr. was charged with accessory after the fact. And now investigators had to speak to little young Alicia, who they knew was present on that night. When they speak with her, they believe her, that she did not partake in any violence towards her mother, but was simply a spectator to this evil and vile sport. She was released into the custody of her family. And then suddenly, all three Mangrum family members posted bail. When investigators went to retrieve Kimberly Mangrum to face more charges, she had fled, and the hunt was on. Kimberly Mangrum became the Tennessee Bureau of Investigation's top 10 most wanted, and she was located at a hotel and immediately taken into custody. Alicia testified that Kimberly had forced her and her brother to take part and to spectate in the murder of their mother. Terry Jr. told the court that Kimberly had threatened the children with violence and with death if they did not partake in this plot against their mother. So what had happened on the night of September 7th, 2002? Kimberly, Terry Jr., and Alicia all waited for Leanne at her home. When Leanne saw her children, she beamed with joy, greeting them with a smile. But very quickly, Kimberly Mangrum ran towards her Jeep. Kimberly pulled Leanne out of her Jeep and began assaulting her in the driveway with a baseball bat. She then placed her body in the back of the Jeep and drove the Jeep to Turnbull Creek. Terry Jr. and Alicia followed in her black Mustang. They placed Leanne in the creek and pushed her body to float away. They then pushed her Jeep right in after her. Suddenly, Leanne began to regain consciousness, and Kimberly screamed at Terry Jr. to finish the job. He stepped on his mother, placing all his weight, and she drowned and died. The three then returned to Leanne's home to stage the scene of a robbery gone wrong. After she destroyed her home and the children broke glass, knocked over lamps, Kimberly grabbed the telephone with one final job for little Alicia. She forced Alicia to call her grandmother Betty, leaving the startling early morning message that Betty told investigators. Alicia, pretending to be her mother, whispered into the phone, "Mom, I'm scared. Help me." Kimberly was charged on all counts and sentenced to life in prison. She is still there to this day. Terry Sr. served 1 year of probation, and Terry Jr. pled guilty and served 8 years. He was released at 24 years old. Alicia, who was never charged, has since remarried and has a family all her own. Terry Jr. has since spoken out about what happened that night and the trauma and pain that he endured under the thumb of his stepmother, Kimberly Mangrum. According to interviews, he carries around an immense amount of shame and guilt for what had happened to his mother. He encourages other people to be honest and to rise above their circumstances and their past, and to not judge others for their past and what they have gone through, because everybody is working towards a greater tomorrow and a better yesterday. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening, and thank you for supporting the ASMR Witch on YouTube, Patreon, and now a podcast. Please leave a comment and rate. It is how people can find me. If you have not joined us on Patreon, now is the perfect time to do so. At the ASMR Witch Patreon, you will receive multiple true crime videos each month that will not be accessible on YouTube. And if you would like a video companion where I read the script on video to this episode, then please come over to Patreon, because it will be posted in the next few weeks, just in time for October and spooky season. Thank you again for all of your support. And as always, be mindful and be cautious consuming any true crime content, especially that of true crime ASMR content. It is not for everybody, and that is okay. Thank you for being here, everybody, and I will speak to you very, very soon. Goodbye.